Hare Krishna, everyone. I wanted to chant Bhaja Hum Rema now before class. Everyone has a song sheet? It's coming. I'll read the translation. Yesterday I gave this one. It drops a little. This one. It goes slowly down. Yesterday I gave a singing class to the brahmacharis. The main thing, if you chant, is that you know what you're chanting, even if it's Lord Nisingadev prayers or the Sangsara prayers, that you know what you're singing. Because if you know what you're singing, then you can put your feelings in it, right? So, like that. And then, of course, it's nice if you chant, if you... Thank you. Hare Krishna. If you listen to the person who leads to sing, if he sings soft or he sings, then you follow soft. And if he's in time, and just the melody, preferably, like that. And then it becomes very palatable. Okay. So the translation of this verse, it's all about the mind. The mind can be, it said, can be our greatest friend, but also our greatest enemy. And the mind, it starts actually already in the early morning. You know, when you wake up and your mind goes, and your intelligence says, no, wake up, wake up. And your mind goes, like that. So the mind, he always listens to the senses. So if he listens to the senses, he has the tendency to listen to the senses. If he listens to the senses, then he's acting as your enemy. So the whole point of to become Krishna conscious, according to my understanding, is that you have to become conscious that you're not this mind. That you understand, here's my mind talking and dragging me away from Krishna. And here's my mind peaceful, you know, like that. But in generally, the mind has the tendency to turn away from Krishna consciousness, to turn to the objects of the senses, to get along, to go along with the senses and say, oh yes, if I do this, then I will enjoy. And if you listen to the mind, you end up miserable, right? We all know that from past experiences. So in the morning, sometimes, I've said this before, but there's a quote I read from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He says, sometimes you wake up, you know, and you look at the watch, or the alarm clock, and it says 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock or 2:30, and you're wide awake. And you think, it's too early. So you go take rest again. And then it's 4 o'clock and your alarm clock goes maybe off, then you're completely tired, you know, or like that, or you just sleep right through Mangalarti. So I myself, if I wake up, then and I feel not tired, then I just wake up. Well, I have the good fortune I can take rest in daytime, not all of you. You know, that's an advantage. And if you have to work all day, then it's difficult. But for those who can take a nap in, you know, in daytime, they just get up. This morning I woke up and I thought it was late already. But it was, then I had to go all the way on the back out of my bed and turn my laptop on because there's no clock, neither do I have an alarm clock, neither do I have a watch. And then it was almost two, you know, like that. And then because I know that I had to record the children at 6 o'clock, so I thought, well, let me get up, then at least I get some rounds done. So like that. And then I take rest maybe after breakfast. But all of you might not have that good fortune. But in case you wake up, just chant, and then you might finish your rounds before Mangalarti and then take rest after Mangalarti and wake up again before Guru Puja or something like that, you know, like that. When you travel, sometimes you have jet lag, you know, like if you go to Australia, for instance, and you wake up at 12 o'clock because it's your normal time. And then when I was there in where was it, Melbourne, and I woke up every time at 12. So I just chatted my rounds before Mangalarti and then went to bed after Mangalarti, woke up again for Guru Puja somehow. Like that. Just some thoughts. So here's the translation of this song, one of my favorite songs. O mind, just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, which make one fearless. Having obtained this rare human birth, cross over this ocean of worldly existence through the association of saintly persons, both in the day, both in the day and at night, I remain sleepless, suffering the pains of the heat and cold, the wind and the rain. For a fraction of flickering happiness, I've uselessly served wicked and miserly man. What assurance of real happiness is there in all of one's wealth, youthfulness, sons, and family members? This life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal. Therefore, you should always serve and worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. It is the desire and great longing of Govindadas to engage himself in the nine processes of bhakti, namely hearing the glories of Lord Hari and chanting those glories, constantly remembering him and offering prayers to him, serving the Lord's lotus feet, serving the Supreme Lord as a servant, worshipping him with flowers and incense and so forth, serving him as a friend, and completely offering the Lord one's very self. Just previously, the class of Guru Gopal, he was mentioning that Bali Maharaj was completely surrendering Atmanivedana, the one. And the Saravanam, hearing, you know, if each one has a personality who is famous for it, like Arjun, by hearing the Bhagavad Gita, he became perfect. All right. I just have to find, can I have, 1 second, I have somewhere else a song. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 22nd chapter, text 27, right? Or 8? What's written there? Translation. Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service, because they are causes of false prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, purported by Srila Prabhupada. Devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, who was given unlimited material opulence, have the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once Kuvera wanted to give Dhruva Maharaj a benediction, but although Dhruva Maharaj could have asked him for any amount of material opulence, he instead begged Kuvera that he might continue his devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulences. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service, although he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. He does this to make a devotee prideless, or put him in a better position in devotional service. If a special devotee is meant for preaching but does not give up his family life or material opulences to take to the service of the Lord, the Lord surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service. Thus, the pure devotee becomes fully engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'd like to offer my obeisances to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, to Sukadev Goswami, the speaker, to Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of music and learning, and to Srila Prabhupada, by whose mercy we are able to hear these wonderful pastimes to enlighten us and to draw us closer to the Supreme Lord. So what struck me was this line: when a devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulence. Like that. I thought that was very interesting. So here in the purport, Dhruva Maharaj is mentioned. So recently, I was hearing Srila Prabhupada saying in a lecture that one time he was on the street distributing books, magazines, and then a bull came, and he was, I don't know how you call it in English, gored by the horns. So Prabhupada became, he said in the lecture, a little depressed. You know, why is this happening to me? Or he tries to set up a society, but it doesn't work. No one comes like that. So Dhruva Maharaj, at one point in his life, his younger brother was killed by the Yakshas while hunting. And Dhruva Maharaj became extremely angry. And then he went to Alanathpuri, I think the city was where, and these creatures are like more like ghostly creatures, and he started fighting with lots of them, and they had some mystic power, so he was a little baffled. But then the sages spoke to him from the sky, that if you take shelter of the holy name, then everything, you know, all this, then you will be all right. Just by chanting and hearing his holy name. Just by chanting and hearing it. And there will be ultimate protection from death. And so then he chanted. I think it was Om Namo Narayanaya Namaha. And then he performed Achman. And then he took his bow. And then he shot an arrow. And then all the illusion of the Yakshas was gone. But you know, and then he start killing off many, many, many living, and many of those Yakshas, and only one killed his brother. So then Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, which is his, anyone knows? His grandfather, appeared to him. And he said, "My dear son, your killing of so many Yakshas is not approved by any authority, neither it befits our family. Although you are greatly grieved by the death of your brother, just consider your punishment. For one Yaksha's offense, you have killed many others who were all innocent. It is far from easy to reach the abode of Lord Sri Hari, but you are destined to go there, being his pure devotee. Your life, my son, is meant for exemplary behavior. I'm therefore quite surprised to see how you could have acted so abominably. By your action, Dhruva, you've upset Kuvira. You should pacify him properly before his rage affects our family. And Lord Vishnu is very pleased when his devotees treat others with patience, mercy, and equality. So control your animosity. As you should know, on the path of perfection, anger is our greatest foe. So some say anger is our greatest foe. Some say lust is our greatest foe. Pride. You know, we have so many enemies like that. So Krishna consciousness for me means to see that it's your mind speaking. It's your tongue speaking, your genitals speaking, your eyes speaking, your ears speaking. And to withdraw and say, no, 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 no. I've tasted it before and I just ended up crying. I don't want this anymore. But even great yogis, even great devotees, sannyasis, gurus, they sometimes fall down. Because it's very, you know, Maya is very tricky, can be very tricky. So Lord Kuvira, he appeared. Kuvira is of the demigods, he's the treasurer, he's very rich. So he heard that Dhruva Maharaj had stopped killing the yakshas, so he appeared before him. And he said, it's also very nice instructions, I'm very glad, O Dhruva, O sinless son of a Kshatriya, that by the instructions of your family, you've given up all your enmity. Our identification with our body is the cause of reincarnation. And actually, you haven't killed any yakshas, nor have the yakshas killed your brother. For the ultimate cause, you know, of our behavior to each other is the Lord's eternal energy of time. And then he says, you know, please ask me for a boon. And then Dhruva Maharaj says, you know, I just want to, you know, fix in Krishna consciousness. So Dhruva Maharaj, when he was a young boy, and he was about 5 years old, so his younger brother, Uttama, was sitting on the lap of his father, and he wanted to also go on the lap of his father, but the stepmother, the mother of Uttama, was there in the room, and she disapproved. She went like, You know, and the king saw that, and because that was a favorite queen, so he went like, Dhruva. He pushed him gently, or maybe not even gently, but he pushed him away from his lap. So Dhruva Maharaj, you know, being a Kshatriya, you know, and being 5 years old, you know. So he started to cry and went to his mother, and some maidservants who have seen what happened went to the mother, because the mother said, what happened, Dhruva? He said, crying, couldn't speak, crying, crying, crying. And then the maidservant said, no, this has happened. And then the mother said, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. I said, oh Dhruva, 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 Dhruva. You know, unfortunately, what your stepmother has said is true. You know, what the stepmother said, I forgot to tell what the stepmother said. She said, look, that child, you know, you're not worthy to sit on your father's knee. And then, and why? Because you haven't taken birth from me. She says, very nasty. And then she said, if you have the desire at all to sit on the lap of your father, then you should worship the Lord, the Supreme Lord. And then maybe, if you're fortunate, in your next life, you might take birth of me. And then you can sit on your father's lap. So that's why he became furious. So he was relating this to his mother. And he says, you know, so the mother was saying, yes, she is. It's true. By worshipping God, one can fulfill one's desires. And he said, where do I find God? Where do I find him? 5 years old. And she said, well, great sages, they go to the forest to meditate. He immediately left home and went to the forest. So then he was performing all these austerities. So after all performing these austerities, and at first eating just berries and drinking water, and then eating only the dry leaves, and then only drinking water, and then only breathing, and then he stopped actually breathing Jai, my Lord. Hari Hari Bo. So he actually stopped breathing, and because he stopped breathing, the whole universe, every living entity couldn't breathe anymore. They went, so all the demigods approached Lord Vishnu, my dear Lord, what is happening? And then he said, don't worry, you know, it's due to this extreme, severe austerities of Dhruva Maharaj, but, you know, I will go to him and sort it out. Don't worry. So he went. So at that time, Dhruva Maharaj was actually seeing the Lord in his heart. Can you imagine? And if you see this four-armed form, it's so enchanting, you know. So he was meditating on this form, and he was completely in bliss, completely blissed out. And then suddenly that form disappeared, and he opened his heart, and that same form was right in front of him, and he was, oh, and he paid his obeisances, and he wanted to say something, but he couldn't say anything because he didn't know what to say. So then, what did the Lord do? Who knows? He touched him with his conch shell. So Lord Vishnu has four weapons or four things in his arms. A lotus and a conch shell and a chakra and a club. So the latter two are for killing off, for hurting, and the first two are for blessings. So he touched the conch shell to Dhruva's head, and then by the touch, all the what's the word of the Vedas? The import? Import? That's the proper word that came to me. The import of the Vedas came to him. So he understood everything. He understood how the world was created. He understood the Supreme Lord, his various energies, his incarnations. Everything was completely clear. So in the same way, when you become a pure devotee of the Lord, you become realized. Krishna gives you from within. You can read all the books. You can read the Bhagavad Gita many times. You can read the Bhagavatam many, many times. But if it's just to gather knowledge or to show off your learning, your shlokas, then it's purifying, but the knowledge is not coming. It's only if you engage simultaneously, or even without reading, if you engage 24 hours a day in one of these limbs of devotional service, like hearing, or cleaning the temple, or offering things, or like that, remembering him, then the Lord becomes attracted to you. Not by having a very smart brain, and especially not if it's just to impress others, like that. So knowledge, if you perform devotional service, and you go to the Bhagavatam class, and you go to Mangalarti, and then and you listen to lectures and you read a little, but even without reading, if you go to the class and you listen to lectures while you do something with your hands, then knowledge comes and comes and comes, and after many, many years, or sometimes after a few years, you become more and more Krishna conscious. And like I was saying, was it here? I was saying that in London. Maybe here. You know that for me, Krishna conscious means also to become conscious of the Paramatma in your heart. You know that voice. I was saying that on Sunday. I remember this to the guest. So, like when you were a child, when you're a little child, everyone hears this voice. So if, say, for instance, you break something in your house, and your mother said, who has done this? You don't say anything, or you say, he, or you might lie, and then you feel bad afterwards, or if you don't say anything, that you did it, right? So that voice, you clearly hear when you're very young, the super soul speaking to you, it guides you. And But when you stop listening to him, that voice becomes softer and softer. You know, it's just like if you do something and I say, oh, Prabhu, don't do that, you know, it's not good for you. And you do it anyway, and you see it doing it again. I might warn you another time, maybe another time, and then I stop warning you. So just figure it out yourself, like that. So the Lord is like that. We are created in His image, so we have that feeling from, you know, can't be bothered anymore to tell Him because He doesn't listen anyway. It's a waste of time throwing my pearls before swines. That's to the atheists, but it's more or less also wasting time. If you tell something to a devotee and he doesn't listen, then, well, he has to find out himself the hard way, isn't it? I was just telling someone something, and he said, but I've been doing this for 10 years already, and I've been instructing other people to do that. Well, I didn't say anything anymore. What can I say if he thinks he's right? Like that. You know, that is our ego. You know, like that. Our ego immediately, no, I'm perfect, I'm powerful, I'm happy. I have no mistakes. You are wrong. Like that. Or they say, oh, that's just your opinion. And like that. So we have there's all these traps, you know, where you can step in. So, going back to the purport. Let me see if there was. Yeah. So, going back to the mind, right? So, in the morning, you know, the mind, from the very, very start of the day, you have to listen when you wake up to discriminate between your mind, who's saying, no, don't want to get up, it's too late, and this and this, and your intelligence say, go, wake up, get up. It's better, you feel better, you know. And then every day again, you have to decide. You have to choose to listen to. And sometimes you have a period you listen to your intelligence, and sometimes you have a period you listen to your mind, and sometimes it's up and down, and like that. Until you're a pure devotee. Like that. So there's 5-6 minutes left. Any questions? Comments? Corrections?